So I want to thank everyone for having me back again. Just so I know how quickly to go through various material, can I see a show of hands of everybody who was here last year and saw my talk last year? All right, that's like 98% of the audience or so. So this is sort of the second installment of that talk to talk more about the future of GPL compliance and enforcement and what's needed. My talk last year was about the history and past of GPL compliance and enforcement. So I want to talk about some current events in GPL compliance issues and some future-looking ideas about what needs to happen for the future of copyleft. So this is my standard who I am slide, which since you saw my talk last year, you have a pretty good sense of this. I've spent a lot of my life on GPL compliance and GPL enforcement, and I have to take a certain amount of responsibility for a lot of the enforcement that's happened. I'm probably the person responsible for nearly all the GPL enforcement in the US. I've been given a hard time for this. My answer is, well, somebody has to do it, and it needs to be done, which I'm going to talk about a little bit later. Being here in Germany, Harald is probably best known for most of the GPL enforcement in Europe, and he and I are sort of the two sides of the Atlantic folks doing enforcement. The strange thing that's happened is there is this industry that has sprouted up about GPL compliance and GPL enforcement. And they have a job to try to sell the idea of GPL compliance services. These are for-profit companies. And they tell you that compliance is difficult. They've used me and Harald Welte as the reasons you have to buy all sorts of services, because what if Harald Welte or Bradley Kuhn come knocking at your door? Now, the fact that large industries are terrified of basically two people, Harald does look a lot scarier than me, because he's like, you know, he's in the Chaos Computer Club and one of these hardcore hacker types. I wish I were that. You know, I'm jealous of Harald in a lot of ways. But I don't think either of us are that scary. And it really disturbs me that I've created this industry. I sleep pretty well at night, but one of the things that can keep me up at night is thinking about the black ducks of the world, and that I have some amount of responsibility for creating that, and I wish I hadn't. I wish it didn't exist. And it's their job now to make me seem scarier than I am, to make enforcement seem scarier than it is, to make the GPL seem scarier than it is. Because that type of FUD aids them in being able to sell services basically the companies don't need. That's what salespeople do. They try to sell you stuff you don't need. They always say a good salesperson can sell ice to people from Alaska in the wintertime. That's their goal, is to get you to buy stuff. In fact, most of them are, the most ironic thing about this whole thing, most of them are selling some proprietary system. These black duck type companies, they have these scanning tools that they will sell you that I don't think anybody actually needs. As near as I can tell, they don't really do all that much. And they have some big proprietary system you can buy. So if you want to be in compliance with open source and free software, what you need to buy is some big proprietary software system to do it. That just can't be right, in my view. And I ask people to just educate themselves. Harald and I are both very approachable people. You should come to us and ask about what we really do and seek in GPL enforcement, rather than believe what some company who's trying to sell you something tells you we will ask for. So this slide is almost identical to the slide I had last year. I left it in here. I was sitting in the back of the room during John's talk. Sorry, John, working on these slides. I was paying attention, at least 30% of my brain. And I left the slide in here just to remind people that there's a reason we have the GPL. You all saw, I won't talk through it because you all saw this slide, most of you saw this slide last year. But this is the only way we're going to guarantee free software and software freedom for the future, is by having a document, a constitution that says what the GPL is. But it doesn't, how the constitution, how the law, how the rules get enforced can vary. And we make choices as copyright holders of GPL software, how it gets enforced. And I want to take a little bit of a poll. I used to have a U.S. I made it a German speed limit sign. But how many people have not obeyed a speed limit sign in the room? Raise your hand. Don't worry, they're not giving out tickets. Okay, so keep your hands up. Just put your hands up if you ever ignored one. Do you routinely put your hands down if you routinely ignore 10 over? Leave it. Okay. How about 20 over? Put your hands down. Does anybody routinely ignore 30 over the limit? How about 40? Is anybody's hands left up? All right. Okay. So there's a question of severity here, right? Routinely 10 over, almost everybody still had their hands up. Pretty much everybody had their hands up to ignore them at any time. And 10 over is common. 40 over in this room is completely uncommon. Now, put your hand up if you've ever been paid, you've made money by ignoring the speed limit. Is anybody in this room? Okay, one person, two people, three, four, five. All right, leave your hands up. And now go back through. Let's do 10. You routinely ignored 10 over and you made money. They're not putting their hands back up. Right? So even if they've routinely made money ignoring it. Well, I'm actually talking in GPL enforcement about people who routinely make money by avoiding the GPL. And that's because almost every GPL violation that I know about is by a for-profit company. They make more money by failing to comply with the GPL. It's exactly analogous to someone who drives a commercial vehicle, a truck, that delivers something, that just ignores the speed limits to get there faster. Because if you can deliver stuff faster in the trucking business, you're a better trucking company, right? But yet they have to comply with weight limits, they have to comply with speed limits, all sorts of regulations all over the world on commercial vehicles. And those regulations are different for commercial vehicles than they are for individual, non-commercial, personal vehicles. And in both cases, those who comply with the rules, those who comply with the speed limit, don't make as much money as those who violate the speed limit. By undercutting your competition on the compliance rules, on the requirements of the laws around you, can make you more money. And it's a matter of degree. I don't think the trucks should get pulled over in 50-kilometer zones for going 53 kilometers per hour. If they're going 60, probably should get pulled over. If they're going 70 in a 50-kilometer zone, of course they should get pulled over. I assure you that every GPL enforcement case I've ever worked on is, in my view, the moral equivalent to 20 kilometers or more over the limit on a regular basis. Now, most of the debate in GPL is about GPL compliance. It's about all sorts of complex issues of whether something's a derivative work and how many angels can dance on the head of a GPL pin, right? And I engage in some of these debates. You'll find me on my blog or on Identica debating people about these little nits and nats of details of what the GPL says. And if you read this line this way, then the person who distributes the software has to do this. And I love being in those debates, but the fact is, that's not really the fundamental problem that GPL enforcement. And frankly, I haven't been good with PR in the sense that I'm happy to engage in these very detailed, complex debates about what the GPL means on esoteric planes of existence. But when I'm doing enforcement, I'm trying to address a very fundamental problem. There are hundreds and hundreds of products on the market right now you could go to the electronics store and buy today that have GPL software, that probably a lot of them have Samba in them. And you will not get an offer for source code. You won't get told that Samba's in there. You won't get told that you have a right to source code. You won't be given the build instructions for that product. There are hundreds of those, and very few people are worried about that. I think me and Harold and the FSF are the only people who on a regular basis get worried about that problem and want to do something about it. And the fact of the matter is the goal, the thing that matters most in copyleft, is to make sure that the person who gets the binaries also gets the source code, and it's the right source code, the source code for that product that will build and install on that product. And that's why I focus on violations that fail to get that part right. There are two types of violations that I generally deal with. This counts for 99.99% of all GPL violations I've ever worked on. Either they're what I call no source or offer, meaning that you got the product and they didn't even bother to tell you GPL software was in it. In fact, years ago when I would give a talk like this, I would say that was the only one I worked on. And then everybody who wanted to violate discovered that I was only looking for the offer, and so they would make an offer that was absolutely invalid. So I had to add this other one, which is I call offer fail, which is you try to test the offer, and you write in and ask for the source code, and they ignore you, or and this happens to me a lot, you send to the postal address, they give you some postal address, and you get the letter back, no such address. I have a stack of those on my desk. I wrote it and said, please send me the source code for this product, and I get back, return to sender, no such address for that product. And this queue has always been full. There have always been companies who don't even make an attempt at doing these two very basic things, just making an offer source code and making sure that offer is valid. And that's what I'm focused on in enforcement. I don't believe in perfection. I'm actually a pragmatist. I know people in the audience probably don't think, at least there's some people who don't think I'm a pragmatist, but I really am. People have accused me, and they say that I want perfect compliance, that I won't settle for anything but for perfection. And most of the people who say that, they actually are usually folks who are not huge fans of copyleft, frankly. And it's this compliance industry, the folks who want to make money off of selling you compliance services and so forth, they're focused on perfection. I was at the Linux Collaboration Summit a month ago. Jeremy was there as well. And there are all these companies around, and they give all these talks about how you have to know every last license and every file and make sure you have every copyright notice in the documentation and that it's an entire book of copyright notices that you have to publish and the licenses require that. And the thing is you'll see me in the hallways and debating these people and saying, yes, you're absolutely right. The licenses do require that you display the copyright notices. And I've generally considered it acceptable to have those copyright notices on a website. And after all, if you give the source code, the copyright notices are in the source code, which means you've complied with that term. And usually those complying with that type of term is relatively straightforward. But the thing is these companies that want to sell you compliance services, or probably not you, but they want to sell your employer's compliance services, they discover they can charge more if they say, oh, you've got to get perfection. You've got to look at every last nit, nat, and lice. And if you don't, boy, somebody's going to come and force against you. And the fact is that I'm looking for offer fail, and I'm looking for no source or offer. If you miss the copyright notice, I'm probably never going to notice, and pretty much no one's ever going to care. It's just not. It's going 3 miles over the limit. Yes, you can't go 3 miles over the limit. But are you going to get pulled over for that? Well, I'm quite sure you probably won't. So in the last, I guess it's been 4 months now, there's been a lot of FUD about GPL enforcement, conservancies enforcement in particular, that we've generally done for BusyBox. I didn't attribute these comments. Some of them are from comments. Some of them are from articles on LWN. It's on LWN. If you really want to know who said it, you can search for the words and you'll probably find it. I didn't want to call people out individually for it. But I'm troubled. Yeah, God, Jeremy.
You need to tell people what
LWN is. Oh, LWN, Linux Weekly News. It's a news, LWN.net. So it's a Linux news site, and it also has comments, so you can comment on articles. So I've taken some of this from the comments of articles, some of it from the source of the articles. So here's an example of the kinds of things that have gotten said lately about enforcement. And I agree that in theory, we could say, oh, well, you've infringed copyright. Copyright is this real, I talked about this last year, this blunt instrument that you can really beat people with. And it's widely, I think, overblown as far as how much you can do with copyright. For example, in the United States and probably in other countries as well, it's criminal activity to do certain types of commercial copyright infringement. I'm completely opposed to the idea that infringing someone's copyright should ever be a criminal act. I believe fundamentally it's a civil matter. It's a dispute between two parties. And law enforcement, the police, should never be involved in an issue of copyright infringement. The RIA and the folks that will be upset at what Jeremy said this morning about what people have on their disks, those sort of folks obviously believe in this idea of criminal copyright infringement. But I think that copyright gives us a lot more power than we actually want to use. And I think that while copyright certainly, this argument is true on its face, because you could use copyright to say, aha, you've infringed the copyrights of, say, BusyBox or Samba. Therefore, I'm going to ask you to take all your products off your shelves, and you're prohibited from distributing. I'm going to go to a court, and I'm going to get an injunction that prohibits you from distributing, which means thousands and thousands of things in items in warehouses have to be junked. Well, first of all, that's bad for the environment anyway, so I wouldn't ask for that. But I've, in fact, accepted really disgusting settlement terms with GPL violators just to avoid that from happening, because I never wanted product to be junked. I never wanted them to have to interrupt their business process with their shipping units. I wanted people to be able to ship units, because the goal of free software is to get people using it, to get people sharing the software. And if we say, well, we're going to stop you from distributing it, we failed to reach our goal. Our goal is to get people to use it and distribute it and share it with other people. So everything I've done in GPL enforcement has gone through contortions to try to make sure people can do that, and that even if they violated the GPL, they're not somehow impeded from doing that going forward, because the goal is to get them into compliance and keep them shipping. I consider it complete failure if the outcome of an enforcement action is somebody stops using free software. The outcome of enforcement action always has to be get them using more free software, in compliance, of course. And I'm not saying I haven't failed. Everybody fails in their life. But my goal is always to succeed. My goal is to get them to keep using it and be happy about using it once we help them get into compliance. This is a weird argument to me. But this idea, and I'm going to explain in detail why. But I've heard this a number of times, and this person obviously heard it as well. I try to chase the source of this, right? So if people say, I've heard people are worried about this, I've heard that there might be copyright trolls. I haven't seen an example of a copyright troll in the free software space. But it's predicated on this idea that you actually get rich or really wealthy from suing people from copyright infringement. Even in the worst cases of copyright infringement, something like the MPAA, if you compare the amount of money they spent in the litigation to the amount of recovery they got, it's really just punitive from their point of view. The fact is it's more expensive to the individuals. Of course, they're suing individuals. Well, we do enforcement action, it's to a for-profit company. But you don't actually get tons of money out of the copyright infringement action. You can't actually go into the business like a patent troll would, where if you get a patent, you can get these multi-million dollar judgments from courts when you do patent enforcement. Copyright just doesn't work that way. You don't get these gigantic settlements that you get in patent. And you also have the problem that your actual, what's in the US we call them actual damages, are not significant, right? Whereas if you're a proprietary software company and you sue over copyright infringement and you do an action, well, you can say, well, we could have been selling that product because it was our copyright. So we could have been selling our competing proprietary product, and we could have made all that money that you made, so you have to give us all the money you made from the product. In the free software space, we gave our code away at no charge under a very broad license, in fact, a very permissive license, believe it or not, although that's not the terminology that's used. GPL gives you a lot of permissions and rights and things you can do without ever having to ask the copyright holder. And if you have that broad license, for me to come as a GPL enforcer and say, well, we lost money, that's not a valid argument, really. I mean, we try to make them, but they're not really that strong, because it's not the case that somebody else was unable to go into the market. In fact, everybody can equally go into the market when something's GPL'd. So no one individual lost money because someone violated the GPL. So there's no real way that somebody could get a hold of these copyrights and start trolling on them. And I will do a thing that the lawyers I work with, I call this arguing the alternative, where you say, even if the other person is right, then I have an argument to answer that, even if you decide they're right. So in the alternative, even if it's true that people could go copyright trolling, the argument is, well, that I'm inspiring the copyright trolls to go do this. Well, I mean, frankly, I've already done it. They're already inspired. It's not like I can unenforce the GPL from all the enforcement I did in the past. So if folks are going to go and do this, they can already do this. I don't think it's going to happen, and the reason that it's not happening are these other reasons. But it's too late. The cat's out of the bag on that anyway. So if someone wants to go get a bunch of copyrights from Linux and go troll people for money, they could do that. I hope they don't, and I don't think they're going to be successful at it if they try. And by the way, if somebody does that, I will be the first there to try and help to make it stop. I don't believe that trying to hit people up for money is the primary reason to go enforcing the GPL. The thing is, GPL is a weird thing in the world because it's a legal infrastructure and it's a copyright license which interacts all these legal details. But the problems of GPL compliance are not actually legal problems. They're not even problems about not knowing about the GPL and all that sort of thing. The problems that I'm trying to just address are fundamentally engineering problems. Because everything else that isn't an engineering problem in GPL enforcement is usually fixed within a matter of hours of when I raise a GPL enforcement with somebody who's willing to get it resolved. It's the engineering stuff that lasts. Because the easy stuff, like getting the copyright notice right, I talked about that, you can get it right and you get it close enough and it's fine. You can deal with issues of different licenses and contradictory licenses and EULA wrappers, which is a whole other thing I could talk to you about at length, one of these little angels that dance on heads of pins, but it's easily resolved. The various other informational requirements about telling people that software is GPL, you put a notice in the documentation, it's not that hard. That's all really easy to resolve. The thing that I spend all my time on, not all, but 80, 85, 90% of compliance efforts is getting a source code release that actually matches the binaries that were shipped, that will actually build. This is what takes so long. And in fact, it's somewhat the violator's fault because they don't actually put the engineers on the phone who built the software to talk with me and say, okay, we need to make this build. Let's talk about how to make this build correctly. Or even worse, they don't know who the engineers were because they bought it from an OEM who bought it from somebody else who bought it from somebody else. So it's four companies back who actually looked at the software and everybody's just been passing the same firmware along step by step. And the worst part about it is, even if I can talk to engineers about this, these are not interesting technical problems. Getting something to build for some specific device in the right way is not the most exciting engineering stuff you could spend your time on. So getting engineers involved is tough. I usually take them at the end, but if you have something burning, okay, I'll get you at the end. I'll get you first at the end. So the other thing that I've been criticized a lot for in the last few months is this idea of asking for compliance on software you're not currently representing the copyright holders on. So this is the classic case of when Conservancy has enforced for BusyBox, it asks for compliance on other GPL'd software, like Linux, for example. The fact of the matter is every GPL enforcer that I've ever heard of, at least ones doing it for the community, have asked for this. I talked to Harold about this, and he's told me in every single case he's done, he's also asked for compliance on, he's enforcing on Linux, he's asked for compliance on BusyBox and Samba and so forth. Everybody asks for this. So it's been a standard thing. It's been a standard thing I've been asking for. I talked last year about that for a decade or more. And actually, the violators want the help. And I talked last year about how violators really want the help of getting into compliance with everything so they don't have a line of copyright holders out the door. It's actually easier from an engineering perspective because most of the build scripts, the stuff the GPL requires that you include in addition to the source code to get the software to build for a particular device, that's usually the build system for the whole product. It's not like they write a separate build process for each GPL program separately. They write an overarching build system that builds all the GPL software for that product. So it's usually easier just to give those scripts for all the GPL programs, not just one of them. And I think this is, last thing, is the most central argument for why, if you have an enforcement action that you're doing, you should get someone in compliance for everything. It's because the person or the entity or the copyright holders that enforced against you are now on your side. Because there is this worry about copyright trolls. I don't think it's that valid of a worry, but if the worry exists, we should address it. If there are copyright holders lined up out the door, and the first one to knock on your door says, I will help you get into compliance with everything, and when all those other copyright holders come knocking, I'm going to be an expert witness for you saying, well, you were out of compliance at one point, you're a good, upstanding citizen now, and these other copyright holders, the only reason they're still knocking is because they want money. Because If all they wanted is compliance, which is the primary thing that I want when I enforce the GPL, I brought you into compliance. I got that thing that we all wanted. So the only thing beyond compliance that anybody could want out of an enforcement action is money. Now, it's not that I'm against asking for money in enforcement actions. I'm going to talk about that in a minute. But if somebody's already in compliance, if Harold gets somebody into compliance and they give GPLviolations.org a check for that work of coming into compliance, I'm not going to go with BusyBox copyrights and say, aha, you were out of compliance before Harold found you, and now I want to hit you up again. No, I'm going to say, hey, it's one less violation I have to deal with because Harold took care of it. And any legitimate GPL enforcer is going to say that. The illegitimate ones, the copyright trolls, might come attacking and trying to get damages for past infringements, and you want the legitimate ones on your side because it's going to stop those copyright troll problems. There's been a lot of talk about other things that I've asked for in enforcement actions, this thing about taking stuff off shelves. This is the entire list of stuff that I've ever asked for in an enforcement action. I've asked people who've heard I've asked for other things to tell me who said it and when and where and in what context, and I haven't gotten an answer to that. So this is the laundry list of things we ask for. The last one deserves some more attention, and I had this slide in here last year, but I'm going to throw it in again. To make it clear that you can't get rich from doing this work. If you could, there would be people doing what patent trolls do. It comes down to a question of how enforcement should get paid for. And I fundamentally believe that violators should bear the cost of bringing themselves into compliance, which includes paying the entities that did the enforcement to do the work to bring them into compliance. It's a lot of engineering work that we do with violators to get them into compliance. I don't want individual donors to a project to have to bear the cost. Somebody who comes to samba.org and gives you $20 for your project, that money should not be spent on doing enforcement because that donor wants to spend it on other things like sending you all to conferences and that sort of thing. And frankly, money is the only way to get through to a for-profit company. It's the only way to deter them from acting badly. If the only cost of a GPL violation is that you have to do what you would have had to do anyway, no one will comply with the GPL until an enforcement action. My goal here is to inspire everyone to just comply without me having to do this. I never want to do enforcement again. So if everyone just stop violating, I'll move on to other things. Finally, everything that a nonprofit does is public. You can go read what my salary is on our Form 990. I don't tell people what it is because I want to inspire people to read our 990, so I tell people, you can find out what my salary is on Conservancy's Form 990 and then make you go download it. It's on our website. It's not hard to get. It's a PDF file. So you can see how much was recovered by Conservancy in enforcement actions. You can see what that money was spent on. That's accountability. And I think that it's really important for nonprofits to do enforcement so that accountability is there. So you can verify that I'm not getting rich or wealth, and the Conservancy is not getting wealthy from doing enforcement. And frankly, I want to talk more publicly about enforcement actions we're doing, and we may do some of that. At the moment, I'm trying to respect the wishes of violators who have asked for confidentiality when they've had an enforcement action against them. And if they ask for that confidentiality, I want to give it to them. So why do I keep doing enforcement? I mean, I get a lot of pushback from a lot of people. I've gotten folks who are against any organization I've ever been affiliated with because I've done enforcement with various entities. I'm going to keep doing it. I can't stop, and here's why. Because if the GPL is never enforced, you should relicense Samba tomorrow under ISC license. Because people comply, quote unquote, with the ISC license, i.e. give their code back to upstream all the time. People give code back to upstream for reasons other than the absolute requirement of the license. And I encourage people to do that. And when I give back to permissively licensed project, which I've done, I send my patches under ISC or whatever the license of the project is. I put my code under out there under non-copyleft because I want to give back. And there are many companies that want to give back. But the thing is there's a difference between copyleft and non-copyleft. And the difference is that if the license wasn't there, there are people who wouldn't give back. There are proprietary forks of every major permissively licensed project. There aren't proprietary forks of copyleft projects because the license doesn't permit it. And frankly, if everybody's, if you guys have the Samba team meeting on Friday and say, yep, Samba's going to ISC license, we're going to get every copyright holder to agree, and we're going to be ISC licensed, I'll say, okay, great, that's the license of Samba now. Conservancy has plenty of permissively licensed projects as well as copyleft ones. I'm not against permissively licensed projects, and they chose permissive license because it makes better adoption. More people adopt permissively licensed software. If you want Apple to adopt your software, you've got to permissively license it. And if that's a goal, like our Twisted project in Conservancy, which is a Python network library, a network that's more than a network library, I'm underselling it. But it's a Python library for doing all sorts of cool network stuff. It's permissively licensed, and Apple uses it heavily, and that's what they want. And that's why they're permissively licensed, and I support them. But I fundamentally believe that if there is a copyleft, we should enforce it. And I'll keep enforcing it. If it turns out that not a single software developer ever wants to enforce the GPL again, I'll stop. I haven't gotten code in a project in a year and a half. My last patch was a small patch I made to BusyBox under GPL v2 or later. And I don't get that much opportunity to code. So I'm not enforcing my own copyrights. I'm enforcing copyrights that are held by Conservancy, and I'm enforcing copyrights that are held by individuals who have signed copyright enforcement agreements with Conservancy. Those agreements are cancelable. Eric Anderson could cancel his agreement with Conservancy to enforce with 30 days notice, and I'd stop enforcing for Eric Anderson. I'd stop, if everybody wants to cancel their enforcement agreements with Conservancy, I'll stop enforcing. It's not up to me, it's up to the developers. I don't think that's gonna happen soon. I brought up this issue over breakfast with a few Samba developers, and by the time breakfast is over, they were both signing documents to enforce with Conservancy. I didn't even promote that. I was like, are you sure you wanna sign that right now? Don't you wanna wait a little bit, I said. And they said, no, I wanna enforce, I wanna do it. So there are a lot of people who want to enforce the GPL. And fundamentally, if you're a copyright holder, you have the right to decide what your license is and how it's enforced and when it's enforced. And to the extent to which developers are entrusting me to enforce, I'm gonna keep doing it. And if they wanna, if I break that trust and they feel like I'm not doing good by them, they should cancel their agreements. Samba has a long history of GPL enforcement. And in fact, it's probably the project that has the most developer-run or developer-coordinated enforcement in history. There's a great story that you can get Jeremy to tell you later of one of the earliest enforcement actions ever in the history of GPL in the mid-90s. I made reference to it last year as well. He tells the story better than I do, so ask him in the hallway to tell you the whole story of their enforcement action. It was one of these cases where the violator was actually really nefarious. It rarely happens. It's a good story, but realize it's an exception to the rule because most violators are just completely, don't know what they're doing, they're just totally confused. But in this case, somebody was actually nefariously violating the GPL. So Samba has a strong history, and as most of you know, CMO Source has led Samba's enforcement efforts for a number of years and done an excellent job on that, but he's a developer, and as I've been pointing out in this talk, most enforcement stuff is too boring for developers to be willing to do. I'm just enough of a masochist that I'm willing to do this stuff, even though I'd rather be writing code. Frankly, I'd rather be doing what most of you do. But I saw a need, and I felt I had to do it, and frankly, I wasn't that good of a developer anyway, so I might as well do this. It's just simply the case that enforcement is not an interesting technical problem. I've had this debate with CMO for, we had a debate for like a year and a half. I think he's finally convinced on my point. Because his goal, he's like, well, why don't I enforce? I wanna get some new code for Samba. I wanna get some stuff we don't have yet. The fact of the matter is the average, in fact, the majority GPL violators, overwhelming majority, aren't actually smart enough to write new code that will be any use to you at all. I'm sorry to tell you, if your dreams of GPL enforcement are, we're gonna get new code released. The fact of the matter is, people smart enough to write code that you would take upstream, they're already complying anyway. They're already sitting next to you right now. And their companies don't violate the GPL ever. They just give the code upstream. What's actually happening is these violators are punishing your users. They're putting Samba into devices, and they're making it difficult to upgrade. If they're giving source code, they're not giving the proper build instructions. So if your users who got a device want to upgrade the version of Samba they're using by going back to upstream and getting the newest version, they often can't because the build instructions for the version they got were not adequate. So bringing a new version is completely hopeless. And there's not interesting engineering problems here. There are engineering problems to be sure, getting stuff to build right for a particular piece of hardware is an engineering problem, but it's not the sexiest one that could be worked on. So my proposal is quite simple. Conservancy will get the job done, because Conservancy is an organization designed to do boring work for developers that they don't want to do. And GPL enforcement, in my view, fits that completely. The other reason that I've talked and encouraged Samba developers to enforce with Conservancy is that for many years, BusyBox has been this poster child of GPL enforcement. I've been doing GPL enforcement with the BusyBox project for 6 years now, 7 years, something like that. And there's been criticism. The one criticism in all that rigmarole in LWN and everywhere else about the enforcement efforts, there was one point in there that I think had some moral validity to it, which is, why is BusyBox, why are a group of BusyBox developers deciding compliance widespread for lots of different projects in the free software world? That's actually a really valid criticism. And one of my goals is to build a really strong coalition of many projects that want to enforce together so that all the voices of all the developers of all these projects are heard in enforcement actions. And Samba should be there standing with its other co-projects like BusyBox and Linux in enforcement actions when these things come up. And frankly, we need a lot of attention in the low end of the embedded market. Those folks who make the low-end embedded products are undercutting the folks who do it right, who stay in compliance. Probably everybody's employer in this room are in that class of folks who comply willingly and well, and there's products out there that are undercutting your company's products. That they shouldn't be allowed to do that. This is really a market opportunity in some sense for making sure that the low-end complies as well and actually does what everybody else is already doing in the industry. I just want to finish up by, I added the slide this morning thinking the fact that I've come to Samba XP twice, and I've talked about GPL compliance both times. Frankly, it's the most interesting thing Conservancy does. Now, notice I spent the entire talk telling you how boring compliance is. This is the most exciting as my job gets. Most of my job is doing the really boring stuff for Samba and other projects that nobody else wants to do. I've taken care of multiple flights already for folks to come here. I've got an invoice to send. I'm probably going to do it during the next talk off to a donor who wants to give some money to the Samba project. And writing putting invoices together and reading the invoicing terms and making sure the company pays, man, that's not fun, I can tell you that. But I'm happy to do it to help anything logistical or stuff that is other than software development that projects need. That's what Conservancy is there for, to handle that boring crap that nobody else wants to do. One of the things we do for a lot of our projects, and I want to mention this here because I'm so grateful I don't have to do it for Samba, is coordinate conferences. I spend so much of my time dealing with venue contracts and getting conferences set up. And I am so grateful to CERNET for organizing this conference, because it would fall on Conservancy to do it if CERNET hadn't stepped up to do it for all these years. And I'm sure I'm glad that Samba XP, I get to come and just be a regular attendee. I don't have to worry about the contract with the venue and all this other stuff I have to do from any of Conservancy's other projects. So it's so great when somebody in a community like that steps up and organizes a conference, because it is a lot of work. And it's really great that CERNET's been doing this for so long. In short, enforcement's just a really small part of my work. It's just the most interesting and most salacious, if you will, of Conservancy's work, so people get excited about it because they want to talk about that. But if anybody would like to talk about the ins and outs of signing venue contracts and negotiating with venues on liability protection for people who are on site organizing the conference, I have plenty of interesting knowledge. I could give a whole talk about that. I don't think that talk proposal would have been accepted here at Samba XP, so I didn't make it. But that's Conservancy's job. Do boring stuff so you don't have to. There's a couple of URLs, and I've got like 5 minutes, 8 minutes left for questions. And I want to get to yours first, because you had your hand up mid-talk there.
How do you feel about using source RPMs as the vehicle for staying in compliance? Because right there you have the source and the build instructions all in one.
Oh, I think it's great. I think people who do Fedora-based stuff or CentOS or RHEL-based stuff, it's great. It's funny, but if you go to my blog, you'll find a blog post where people were giving Red Hat a hard time when there was this fight between Oracle over what do they call it, Unbreakable Linux, or unfakeable Linux, whatever it's called. There was a Git repository that the Red Hat developers had been keeping that had all the non-upstreamed Linux patches that they were carrying, and it was really easy to use, and you could clone it. Of course, Oracle was cloning it and using it for Unbreakable Linux, and they stopped doing that, and they just consolidated to the history in the source RPM file as the way that they comply with the GPL, and everybody was up in arms about this, and like, how could they take that Git repository down off the internet, and that GPL requires them to have that. And I read this blog post that said the GPL doesn't require you to put a Git repository up. It requires that you mark your changes clearly, which the source RPM summary was perfectly compliant. And I went and looked at the source RPM for Linux and RHEL, and it was completely compliant, in my opinion, as a GPL expert. So I think SRPMs are great. I think it was unfair that folks gave Red Hat a hard time over that because they were doing the right thing, and they didn't want to make it easy for Oracle, and they decided they wanted to go just to what the GPL required. But the GPL requirements are a line in the sand that you can't cross. And the fact that Red Hat used to do more than just the minimum of what GPL required just meant that they were a particularly good citizen. They became a little bit less of a good citizen when they took away that Git repository, but fully in compliance with the GPL. And you kind of can't blame them given that Oracle is giving nothing to them and taking their stuff away. So yeah, I think if you're working on anything Fedora-based or RHEL-based or CentOS-based, a source RPM is a great compliance tool. For just making sure that you have all the build instructions. More questions?
Any more questions?
Nobody wants to give me a hard time, tell me that I'm destroying the future of free software because I'm enforcing the GPL? Come on, somebody wants to say that.
Jeremy.
Okay, thank you very much.
So Bradley, in fact, it's not really a question. Just realize that, yes, you are doing a lot of boring stuff for us, some of our developers, and wanted just to say thank you for doing this because, well, it makes our life a bit more easier to get reimbursed quickly when we go to events. So thank you very much for the boring stuff.
There's probably a developer or two in the room who would dispute the quickly point, but I don't lose anything. So everybody who's supposed to be reimbursed does get reimbursed. It's not always as quick as I would like either, but if you can always ping me if you're waiting for a conservancy for something, and I'll get it done. And thank you all for letting me come and speak. I get to pretend, come to a conference like this and pretend I'm still a developer, which it's kind of you to pretend that I am, and I appreciate it so much.